Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this first day of a whole new month, the month of February. Sacred Heart University Polling Institute has released its third survey on trust and satisfaction with the national news media. They surveyed 800 Americans from September 8th through the 11th, and they covered new subjects as well, updating results from 2003 and 2007. Respondents were asked if they believed all, most, some, little, or none of news media reporting. 24.3% indicated they believe all or most news media reporting. It's up from 19% from a couple years ago, but it's lower than the 27% recorded in 2003. Perhaps most interesting, and this will be the question that we give you as well, which national television news organization, except we can expand ours to what organization, be it radio, television, but let's look at just broadcast media. Who do you trust for most accurate reporting? What's interesting here is Fox News was named by 30% of all respondents. That's up from 19.5% in 2003 and 27% in 2007. Those who were named most frequently as the television news organization most trusted for accurate reporting, the list goes like this. Fox, 30%, CNN, 19.5%, NBC, ABC News 7.5, ABC News 7.5, but Fox News was also the television news organization trusted least. Just over a quarter named Fox News, followed by NBC News, MSNBC, CNN, CBS, and ABC News. Researchers were also asked for their perceptions of political leanings of various news sources, and we'll find out all those answers as we proceed with this hour. And welcome your phone calls. Our guest is Professor James Castengay, Associate Professor in the Department of Media Studies and Digital Culture at Sacred Heart University. He has Wisconsin ties, received his PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. His research and teaching interests include global media culture and the role of film, television, and the internet and international media culture. Our phone number for you to join this conversation, the question we ask you is, what do you feel offers the most objective reporting when you consume TV and radio? Because of radio, let's talk about that. And which do you most trust and which do you least trust? And let's see if we get anything comparable. 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, that's talk@wpr.org. Professor Castengay, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How can one organization be the most trusted news source and the least trusted news source?
Well, that's a great question. I think to a large degree, it represents a broader partisan politics that we're seeing within political culture. And as you said, the most surprising result of our more recent polls was that Fox did leapfrog over CNN, which had been the most trusted news source. And how does one explain this? I do think it's interesting that it's no coincidence, I think, that Fox News also has about the same percentage of ratings. So about 30% of the people that we polled watch Fox, and about 30% trust it the most. So I think what we're witnessing is that people seem to be seeking out and finding the source that resonates with their worldview, and they view this as the objective truth of the world. So it's sort of telling them, in a sense, what they want to hear, and it seems to be that we have this phenomenon where the other guy's biased or the other side is not accurate, but my source, I have found my source. And I do think that it's misleading to say that that loyal viewers or listeners don't trust their source. I think they do, but they don't trust the other sources. So when you ask them questions about the media, news media more generally, you get these low levels of trust.
So considering the fact that we keep getting more and more partisan, if you are a Fox enthusiast and you believe in the trustworthiness of that organization, you're going to say that, what, CNN or MSNBC is not trustworthy because they are perceived to have a different political bent and vice versa?
Yes. To some degree, yes. I think also what if you watch Fox News, they also make the explicit argument that the other media outlets are biased, have a liberal view. So that's an explicit argument that they make. I think it's also important that this assumption of partisanship isn't necessarily conceded by Fox itself. Its slogan of fair and balanced is well known, and I think if you ask a Fox viewer, they would have a very different, and maybe there are some Fox viewers who will call in and join the discussion, but I think they would say that that in fact they are seeing an objective view of the world from their source, and in some sense it is a balancing out what is perceived as a liberal bias from the other sources.
You talk about Walter Cronkite. I loved Walter Cronkite, who died recently, the most trusted television news anchor. He probably couldn't have been elected president, in my view, during his time. You asked, in your view, who is the most trusted news anchor today? What results did you get, and why do you imagine you got the results you did?
Charles Gibson was the most mentioned, and there are so many anchors that we left it open-ended, and Charles Gibson was named by 19.8% of the respondents, followed by Brian Williams at 17.3%, Katie Couric at 9.9%, Bill O'Reilly at 9.3%, and Tom Brokaw at 8%, and then Jim Lehrer at 2.4%, and then there were others below that. And I think part of the reason that we see the broadcast anchors listed there is we have to remember that the broadcast networks still get a significant viewership, and their ratings are higher than cable ratings for those individual broadcasts. So a lot of people do still turn in to watch broadcast news. The cable networks have not completely dominated that yet, and there are fewer anchors on a given channel. So, you know, Bill O'Reilly has 9.3%. As a cable anchor, but there are also other, if you're a Fox viewer, you may have a different favorite if you tune in during the day. So I think that hurts the numbers there. So I think that's part of the explanation given the structure of broadcast versus cable news.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk that a significant number of people still watch those nightly newscasts, do you have demos on that? Is that true of people, above the age of 40 and younger people just aren't watching? Or
yeah, the demographics are definitely skewed towards the older demographic. I'd say between 8 and 10 million viewers on a given night for a broadcast network's broadcast, but definitely tilted older. Same with Fox News, an older demographic as well. And so what you find with the younger demographics, they are turning to the Internet more as a source of information, and also parody shows, Daily Show and Colbert as well. So I think the Internet is something that perhaps we can throw into the mix here and discuss. But if I could come back to the issue of partisan politics, I think, and partisanship, I think it's important to acknowledge that the way the media industry has developed since the 1980s, which has been a period of increased consolidation of ownership. So you had mergers and acquisitions beginning in the 1980s that has led to a situation where you have a small handful of large corporations that own a high percentage of all of the major news media. So including News Corp, Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, which owns a Fox News Channel, as well as a lot of other things, the newspapers and so on. So we have this highly concentrated structure within a commercial news industry that is profit-driven and is seeking ratings and advertising revenue, and that's largely what drives the news. And so, you know, rather than surveying the world for the information that we need to know, you often have this relationship with your audience where you're telling them what you think they want to hear or want to know. So it's often driven by market research rather than digging up stories that the public really needs to be informed about.
Mm-hmm.
And this has also led to downsizing. Whenever you have a merger, you lay people off, and I'm sure you see this in the newspaper industry as well. Maybe we'll talk about that. But so you're closing down bureaus, you're having fewer reporters. So we have this irony now with our media system, and this is a problem with the news media system writ large, where we seem to have more channels than ever and a lot of options. But those are really there's owned by a small handful of companies, and those voices are really speaking for those small handful of interests. So, in addition to not digging up investigative reporting and independent journalism, what you tend to get is that partisan view. So, the way that the discussion is framed, the debate is often quite narrow. The Republicans are saying this, the Democrats are saying this, and what you don't get are options outside of the way that the debate has been framed.
Right.
And so, I think that is also a large reason for the partisanship.
Mm-hmm. And you did survey people on consolidation of ownership, and as I recall, people were pretty upset about that, where they weren't in favor of it.
That's right. I thought that was one of the most interesting results. People seemed, the majority seemed aware of the problems of consolidation, and they wanted limits placed on ownership. They do think it's, the majority of Americans do think it's dangerous or not good for one corporation or person to own too much media, but they don't trust the government to regulate it. So we have sort of two competing institutions that are not trusted very much, the government and the media sort of in competition with each other. But in terms of the future, there are some interesting avenues to pursue about restructuring our media. And I think it's definitely time that we need to have a national conversation about the importance of news media and journalism to our democracy, and that if we do obviously see these problems with our current media, how are we going to fix them? And as newspapers are closing, how do we revive or reinvigorate journalism, which the founding fathers knew was essential to our democracy? And I think it's a debate that needs to start happening, and shows like this are a good start.
Yeah, I agree. What about our use of, and there's so much on there, how many people rely now on the internet to get their news? And I don't know where they're getting all of it, if they go to specific sources or just to some kind of Yahoo News or whatever. What did you discover about where people are getting their news and whether or not they feel that that's a trustworthy source?
Yeah. We didn't ask too many specific questions about specific sites, but in general, a significant percentage of the respondents did feel that the internet could fill the space left by newspapers closing down, which I found to be a surprising response. And I think that points to that's further evidence that we need to discuss the role of journalism and journalists in our society. Because journalism is a profession, and a lot of what is on the internet, certainly citizen journalism, blogs are a very important part of our current journalism landscape. But we really need to have trained journalists out there whose job and profession and dedicate their lives to informing us about the important issues. Now, having said that, we need to define what we mean by the internet. If you go to any newspaper today that has an online presence, there are official blogs by reporters. So part of what's difficult about polling and surveying about the internet is it's that it's fluctuating all the time, and the media are so blurred right now in terms of their boundaries. So if I have a student who's watching Hulu.com in the dorm, they're streaming an episode of a television show over the web. Is that television? Is that internet use? If one's reading the New York Times online, is that a newspaper or is it the internet? So I think in our next poll, we're really going to try and break down more specifically what people are accessing. But I can tell you in general, there have been recent Pew Research Center polls that also have similar numbers to what we found in general, that for national and international news, 71% of the respondents said that they access television. 42% access the internet, 33% newspapers, and 21% radio. So in the last two Pew polls, the internet had, for the first time, had higher numbers than newspapers. But when it that's for national and international news. But when it comes to local news, television still leads with 64%, but it's inverse with the internet and newspapers. So 41% still rely on newspapers, and 17% rely on the internet. for their local news. So this points to another important issue about how we are still going to have local and community and regional journalism as newspapers continue to close down.
Mm-hmm. And where did, just we may as well ask about ourselves here too, because when you mentioned international news, I really believe that some of the very best international coverage comes from National Public Radio because they have reporters all over the world, and many organizations don't anymore. Where do we figure in the mix, public radio, public television?
Yeah, I think coming back to my point about ratings, I think it would be interesting for us to do sort of a sub-poll where we can ask the questions differently. But I think because there's a smaller viewership and smaller audience that is somewhat stacked against, in the bigger scheme of things, NPR and PBS coming, being a lot of the respondents choosing those. But I have, if you look at independent polling, PBS has done other polls that PBS, for instance, is one of the most trusted institutions in the nation. And I do think there is a lot of support among the public to make sure we have a supported public broadcasting system. And I think one of the directions that we need to move in is vastly increasing the budgets for our public broadcasting as well as radio, especially now that we see the problems with the commercial system. That and this is part of the dialogue that I'm hoping that we have. How can we convince people that journalism, including is a public good, and that public broadcasting should be funded much more than it is?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that one. Let's take some phone calls. Professor James Castingay is our guest, associate professor in the Department of Media Studies and Digital Culture at Sacred Heart University. They just released a poll that they did that it asked a lot of questions, but it was its third survey, trust and satisfaction with the national media. And they asked a number of questions, found that the low level of trust exhibited by poll respondents toward the media is in some respects a manifestation of the growing resentment and distrust among the American people regarding large and powerful institutions in general. We have become increasingly skeptical and suspicious toward institutions which we perceive as distant and manipulative. Small wonder that the media, which is now controlled by a handful of large corporations, is perceived in such a negative light. To your phone calls and to your emails here in just one moment, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor John Castingay, our guest. We go to John from Madison, our first call. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, the survey doesn't surprise me in the least. I don't trust any of the corporate media, including Fox, and I would include PBS and Wisconsin Public Radio. I find them all very adroit at consistently avoiding any real analysis of the corporate control of the political system in this country, corporate crime. The recent Supreme Court decision only underlies this, and they don't really cover what the American foreign policy is, because that's also linked to the military-industrial complex. All of this has to do with the fact all of these entities have a corporate structure, and they depend on corporate advertising. So they'd be cutting their neck were they to tell the public the truth. What do I depend on? I read the New York Times for myself. It's very prejudicial piece of writing, but I can at least I get a lot of different subjects which never ever appear on the regular corporate TV shows. I listen to Amy Goodman's Democracy Now. I read Z Magazine. I listen to WORT locally. I agree with the professor that what people are conditioned to by long-term propaganda is they want views that are consistent with their own self-esteem. They want heuristics that allow them to interpret reality, and that's the function of long-term propaganda, which I think the mainstream corporate media really, really accomplishes. I don't think the public, for the most part, really realize to what extent the wool is being pulled over their eyes consistently, because as long as I've been alive, and I'm 62, This has been going on since I was a young man. So this is really a long-term thing that has got to be fought tooth and nail, because you don't have democracy when you don't know what is going on in this world. And believe me, the American public does not.
So, John, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
You sort of conflated or mentioned commercial media and then also public broadcasting.
That
Do you
is
see
correct.
Any way of fixing that system? In other words, there's some discussion now about Robert McChesney and John Nichols have a book out now that and others are talking about subsidizing, increasing funding for public broadcasting so it is less, extending its budget over more years so that it is less concerned from year to year about political issues and trying to liberate it somewhat from those other influences so it would be free to do other kinds of reporting. Would you, in other words, if we can move towards possible solutions, do you see a distinction there about possibly, in your opinion, improving public broadcasting in that way at all?
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. That is the only thing that's going to save public broadcasting and Wisconsin public radio is they don't depend on their corporate donors.
Right.
Because you can't fight the fact that if you're going to be alive as an occupation, you have to have funding. And who is going to cut their hands off by going against the people that are providing the funding? It's inevitable. John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton have a book called Trust Us, We're Experts, and they make this implicit in this. Everybody does it. Your funding determines your objectivity, whether you like it or not. And that's the only thing that's going to save Wisconsin Public Radio is to get them off the commercial dole.
Yeah, I would have to take issue with you on this, John. I don't think that corporate funding has much influence at all on what happens here. I think that a lack of funding, though, Professor Castingate, keeps entities like this from being able to do a lot of investigative reporting. We just don't have the money to do that. And a third of it comes from listeners, a third from the state, a third comes from corporate funding. But I really don't see much of corporate funding dictating what it is we can do. We just need more funding so we can do more. What do you think? Do you see studies that show that public radio is significantly influenced by corporate funding?
I haven't seen studies that prove that definitively, but I do think that one can't discount economics. And certainly the leadership of public broadcasting in recent years, there's been other kinds of influence in political issues and problems.
Yes.
But certainly I think, $700 million also comes from, government funding, that it's impossible not to consider these issues on some level. So it's a complicated question, but I do agree that it's in all of our interest to vastly increase the funding for public broadcasting, precisely because so journalists can do the kind of work that they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'm seeing, and maybe I need to see more reports on this, but certainly there have been a lot of controversy in the past and attempts to cut off completely government funding. This has happened, it seems like it's every other year since I've been in public broadcasting. But you got the political difference here. You're taking on an issue you shouldn't be airing, and I see more of that from government funding than corporations, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, it's an interesting subject, and it would make a good talk show.
Well, you can hear the passion in,
yes,
in John's voice, and what concerns me, he still has found his source, the New York Times, which is seen as one of the most liberal sources, according to our viewers. He also mentioned Democracy Now!, which is a very important progressive voice that people can access over the Internet and on radio and television. So the question is, how do we get more people to be part of that dialogue and allow more of those voices that are outside of your more traditional bipartisan line? How do we get those voices in the mix?
Yeah. Thanks for your call. We go next to Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Really fine guest. Important topic. The guest and John have said anything that I might have said, but I'll try and be brief and maybe make one additional point. The guest initially pointed out that the answer that Fox is the most trusted makes sense because Fox does tell its audience that it's fair and balanced, and points to any rival organization as biased. So if you ask who's most trustworthy and unbiased, Fox might come to the top of your mind whether or not you believe that. And the second thing is I'm interested in what type of news is actually being presented. So do people take opinion as news, which is mostly what you're going to get on Fox or CNN or even the major networks? And the final point is that I find that major institutions like the BBC, I'm ranking them, the CBC, Deutsche Welle, perhaps the New York Times, which have long-term missions and the funding to be consistently cogent and present, are necessary to get genuine news. And I would suggest that it's those public institutions that have a long-term mission on which they're clear is where the future of getting genuine news is going to come from. So, you know, praise Deutsche Welle or institutions like Le Monde and The Nation and Harper who have freed themselves from that corporate connection. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank, as always. Thank you.
I would just point out something interesting from the recent public policy poll that came out that came up with pretty much the same results that we did in terms of Fox being the most trusted. They asked people to describe themselves as liberal, moderate, or conservative, and 14% described themselves as liberal, 47% as moderate, and 39% as conservative, whereas the split for Democratic, Republican, Independent was pretty much like the national split, which is 36 Democrat, 35 Republican, 29 independent. So it's interesting that only 14% of the country would describe themselves as liberal. So the caller's point about Fox's argument sort of circulating about a liberal bias, most people don't see themselves as liberal. They can be receptive to that argument, and it can really influence people's opinion that way, because a lot of people would not describe themselves, a very small percentage of the population that I found has described themselves as liberal in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Dave from Wisconsin Rapids, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Professor. You've already kind of covered what I had told the screener that I was going to talk about, but I can find something. First, I'd like to say that I pretty much agreed with the earlier caller, John, and I'm reminded of an old Hungarian proverb that goes, whose bread I eat, his song I'll sing. Mm. But a point, I did some quick addition when you were coming out with the percentages of in the beginning of the show, and I added, and there was 30% for Fox, and I added up 34% for the three others. So, and I would hold that Fox has made a marketing decision to aim their news coverage and editorial coverage at what probably would turn out to be pretty much the Republican base, that 30 to 35%. But just an example of bias. The other, on Friday, when the president was meeting with the Republican Congress at a dinner meeting or a luncheon meeting, it was interesting to note later on one of the networks put on the coverage from four of them. Four networks, including Fox, and it was going along quite rosily, and everybody was watching what was happening live. It only seems to me that the people at Fox realized that it wasn't going well. they cut away from it and they put a commentator on who was describing something that hadn't been seen by anybody who was really watching it. So it was such an instant picture of bias that I was amazed that they were willing to do it.
Yeah, I saw that they cut away about 20 minutes before the event was over. And then I also noticed that after that MSNBC had a program where with Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow where they interpreted the great performance by the president as they saw it. And one of the things that Keith Olbermann said was not to be too partisan about this. So it was an interesting moment for me because his interpretation, he named it partisanship. He said it quite explicitly. And as I said before, although people may see this partisanship and bias all the time with Fox, I do think it's important that they don't tend to concede this claim. And so we can go back in terms of the history of journalism to a partisan press in the 18th century where you had different political parties that would publish a paper with an explicit position. But for those who could read, they knew where it was coming from. It was clearly an editorial position. And, of course, we have editorial pages still today. But where it gets a little more complicated is when one is claiming to use objective conventions of journalism but being biased nonetheless. And so I think that is a big difference between even now when we see the MSNBC and Fox. A lot of people see MSNBC as a sort of liberal Fox competing for that market. They're very—they're not winning in the ratings, but they seem to be going in that direction. There is that, I think, important difference. And maybe CNN in the end is going to be viewed as the one that's holding the middle ground, and that will be how the demographics shake out.
But they're losing ratings, right?
That's right.
CNN.
They are. And but they also have headline news, of course. And what Lou Dobbs told Fox News the other day recently that he was told by CNN that they want to move away from opinion-oriented programming, but of course they have this on their headline news. And when you take their ratings together, both headline news and CNN plus their web traffic, I guess that is how they really look at their revenue. But this is a great question: what should CNN do? When Fox News presents a model that seems to work, and that model is the kind that your reader, listeners are describing, what should one do? Well, that's where the advertising and market-driven and profit-driven motivation of the network becomes problematic, because you have to consider, well, how do we, should we copy this? Should we go for a market? Should we be partisan as well?
Right.
It doesn't lend itself to the kind of journalism that a lot of us would expect.
Thank you so much, Dave, for your call. We go to Glenn from New Jersey. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
And hi, guest.
Hi.
Okay, I don't trust any existing news organization that I'm aware of. What I'm looking for as an answer is something on the Internet, but not something that exists yet. Mm-hmm. A comprehensive, multimedia, subscription-based, that is to say, subscription-financed, news service whose political and ideological coloration cannot be even guessed at by even the most sensitive audience member. My model for that last aspect is C-SPAN, and that is the most critical one. Without that, all the rest doesn't matter to me.
Okay. It's funny you say that, because what we're finding in higher education is that even though the prospects for jobs in traditional print journalism seem to be not that great, there is a tremendous interest among students in journalism. They've grown up in this internet environment where they feel like they can express themselves. Multimedia journalism is a very important aspect of this, and they want to document things. So I think we have to. There's been some discussion about funding just such a type of site like you described. If we can make a commitment, as a country to do this, there certainly are a lot of this generation who really want to do journalism, and I hope that there is that kind of, and also, of course, people are working in journalism today as well, but I do think that the future, there is some reason for optimism if we can set up these different kinds of models.
When you say a commitment as a country, What do you mean by that in terms of financing?
I am talking about subsidizing or considering subsidizing, or even more, you know, more tax dollars.
Recognizing they've got to sell it to the consumer and let the consumer decide that it's not slanted. I don't trust the government to do anything in this regard.
And here we are. So here's what's happened: is that because of the current commercial media system that we have, now we're at a crisis, and they've done themselves a disservice, and journalism writ large a disservice because of these levels of distrust that exist for the reasons that we've been talking about. Now it's very difficult to start the discussion, to take a step back and say, do you realize that journalism is an important part of the check and balance system of democracy, right? That it's one of a free press is guaranteed in the First Amendment because the founders knew it was crucial for democracy to survive. So we need to stop, you know, we need to somehow get outside of the commercial market discussion of thinking about people as consumers and really talk about what do we need as citizens. What do we need to be responsible citizens in a democracy? And journalism is central to that.
It sure is. Thank you so much, Glenn, for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah. We go to Chris from Oshkosh. Hi, Chris.
Morning.
Hi.
I wanted to ask kind of a long-winded question here. In our area, at least, there seems to be an enormous amount of conservatively slanted media, especially on the radio, with very, very little liberal media. Even on cable, you know, if I turn on Fox News, it seems to be conservative all day. MSNBC has their liberal shows. But in the morning, they have Joe Scarborough, which isn't liberal at all. And my conservative friends like to tell me that the reason for that, the reason for Air America going under and not those choices, is that it's a very conservative country. And my response, which is a little snarky, but I think I believe it, is that people who are conservative have either more of a need or more of a desire to be told what to think about the news than liberals do. And I'm just wondering if there's anything, you know, any polls or any research that bears that out, or if I'm completely off base.
I'm not aware of any, but I don't know if you heard my just sort of interesting fact from another poll that measured media confidence by the Public Policy Polling Institute, where only 14%, and this was over 1,000 people that they surveyed, so this is the margin of error is quite small, that only 14% of the people would self-identify as liberal. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, I think part of the problem here might be that people, you know, we'd have to define these terms, obviously, to see what we mean by them. But if you ask people, 14% say liberal, 47% moderate, and 39% say they're conservative. So I threw that out there because I think when you see those numbers, it really gives an interesting context to the claims of liberal bias and this discussion.
And thank you, Chris, for the call. We need to pause for a moment. We'll return. We're talking this hour with Professor James Castingay, Associate Professor, Department of Media Studies and Digital Culture at Sacred Heart University. They have just done a national poll, Trust and Satisfaction with the National News Media. The poll finds only one quarter of Americans believe all or most of news media reporting, and they also believe that old-style journalism is dead. Some very interesting findings. That's not all they found. It was a long study, and we're talking about the findings and getting your phone response and email. We have one email, so we'll get to that in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email from Nick. Do you think Fox News and other news outlets should be obligated to run disclaimers before broadcasting broadcasting programs, which they themselves consider opinion and not news?
Well, that's a difficult question. I mean, you know, there is something called the fairness doctrine out there that. One of the things that our poll found is that the public actually does support the fairness doctrine, that when one expresses a political position, that you ought to tell the other side. So I thought that, you know, we see pockets of a desire for that kind of fairness. But I think the solution, those disclaimers, I'm not sure how one would, just on a practical level, decide when this particular kind of program, how you would come to that kind of a conclusion. But I really think where the answer lies is also in our other institutions, that we need to be more what I would call media literate. We need to understand how news is made. We need to, beginning at the K-12 our educational system, sort of teach people about who owns what, teach about the corporate structure of the media, teach about how news is put together, teach about these differences between different kinds and genres of journalism. I think if you have an educated, media-literate consumer of the news, then that really goes a long way towards, I don't want to say immunizing because that sounds, it's not a great word for it, but nonetheless, someone really doesn't have to worry as much about a disclaimer because they sort of understand how that news is made. And I think that's a big part of the discussion that we also need to have in terms of other institutions trying to fix the problem that we're seeing with journalism.
How long has it been? It's been a long time now, hasn't it, since we've had the Fairness Doctrine, back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Long time.
Yes.
It would be interesting to see if it were reinstituted.
And there is support. You know, in principle, in theory, the spirit of the Fairness Doctrine. But again, immediately, though, when the question turns to, well, how would this be enforced? How would it be regulated? When you there's a lot of distrust of any a regulatory institution, fulfilling that role. So it's a difficult question. One of the things I thought I'd mention, too, that because we've been talking about objectivity, of course, the objectivity is an idea. It's impossible to attain, as any journalist will tell you. You guard against these things. But one of the responses that we found that I thought was quite interesting was that when we asked respondents, what do you expect from your media? Because I think there's an assumption that people are looking for objective reporting. And only 59% suggested they made their selection based on objective reporting. Now, that might sound like a high number, but 19% chose their favorite source because it shares the same views that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And another 21% were unsure. So I found that 21% is very interesting to me. That's the 21% that I think needs to be part of the discussion here. So overall, 40% of people who are accessing these sources aren't really sure what they want, or they're not sure that they want objectivity. And I thought that was an interesting finding that we found.
Hmm. Let's go to Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm an older gentleman, and Wisconsin Public Radio, National Public Radio, all the channels, throughout the country are being competed. They have to face competition with Facebook, Twitter, and these radio talk show hosts who have their own radio and television networks now. There's a lot of competition against good networks like National Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio. In my case, for example, I'm blocked. I can't even get in to talk on National Public Radio. That's a fact. And there are certain hosts, I'm not going to name them, on some of the radio stations who have a bias, and the screeners have a bias, and we can't have our point of view heard. For example, I'll end here, we have a Senator Decker in our state who wants to speak out against the great numbers of wolves, coyotes, predators we have, and we can't get on to support him. But there is a screener on a certain program here who will not allow anybody to get on if we want to say that we need to have control of our brush wolves, fox, skunks, etc.
All right, Bill, I just don't believe that's true. We do... maybe you're calling more than once a week, or I don't know what your story is, but it is not true that we wouldn't take calls it's just not true.
Is Bill still there?
No, he's not. Okay. Yeah.
I was just going to ask him if he felt that he was, that the internet, what he's expressing is that a lot of people feel like they want to participate and they feel, correctly or not, that there's a gatekeeper that's not letting their position get through. The internet has been, a very important source for a lot of people who feel this way. I think a question that interests me, though, is how effective is it in terms of productive dialogue? Are we seeing something on the internet that is different from what we're describing in the mainstream media? I'm not so sure. I think there's an interesting discussion to be had there. I would have been interested to know if he feels that, you know, he mentioned Facebook, but if YouTube or the internet seems like an outlet where you can, you know, reach, have your ideas expressed, because it's an important part of our media landscape now, of course.
We go to Scott from Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Yeah, I try and make a point of getting multiple sources for news, from, you know, BBC to NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio to Fox, and I mean everything. But when the media starts covering the media, the one thing that I've noticed is, like, Fox gets brought up a lot, and there are programs that they'll do on Fox. There's never a discussion about MSNBC, a program about MSNBC, which is by far, I would say, farther to the left than Fox is to the right. And I will grant it that Fox comes from a conservative point of view, but if you look at the prime time from 5 to 9, we've got The Ed Show, Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, extremely left-wing, where if you compared it to the same time slots, I mean, you know, the 5 o'clock news, at least they have Mara Liasson and Juan Williams on a regular basis. Keith Olbermann never has anybody, and I'm not exaggerating, never has anybody on that disagrees with him. And the other thing that does the media disservice is, if you watch it, you get Howard Fineman and Jonathan Alter and John Meacham. You get these editors, senior editors from major mainstream newspapers, I mean, on magazines, that are on there agreeing with his point of view all the time. And that's almost a nightly thing.
Could I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Since you watch both, do you think that that MSNBC is hiding the fact that they're partisan, and or do you think Fox is hiding? You know, did you feel that they divulge this when you're watching it? Because I wonder if it's necessary.
No.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I don't. I mean, I look at it with a grain of salt. I mean, I look at it from my perspective. I think MSNBC actually doesn't. Chris Matthews, I think he thinks he's right middle down the road. I mean, I think he thinks that he's just giving a mainstream view of everything, and he really isn't. I mean, they bring biases into it that they just really don't seem to want to agree with.
But what you describe was somebody who's sort of taking responsibility for accessing different media outlets, and you seem to be aware this is coming from this perspective, that's coming from this perspective. I think if you look at it that way, the gestalt of it, when you put it all together, is one thing. It's another if people aren't aware of these biases and these perspectives. I think that does make a difference in terms of their implications.
Well, they've got to be pretty stupid to not be aware of the biases. What's the problem with people's minds if they can't figure out? And some of them certainly must not be figuring it out, because they repeat things as though they are the truth, and they're a version of the truth, no matter if it's MSNBC or Fox or whatever. If it's opinionated stuff, it's opinions.
And so we need to figure out a way to get, you know, not only to make people aware of this is the media literacy I was talking about,
right,
but also to try to get some kind of dialogue across these rather than just assertions and shouting, or dialogue within an individual channel of a substantive debate that includes, you know, Amy Goodman, not just the Republican and Democrat talking points from that day.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott, for your call. Dave from Menominee. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, Amy Goodman is probably my favorite. I wanted to say, you know, that it's exactly right. People are confused. That 21% that you were talking about is more of a confusion. They don't know the difference between, you know, the editorials and the news stories on television. And I wanted to bring up, I decided, I'm a disabled guy, I'm a news junkie, I get my news from everywhere, I try to absorb as much as possible. That way when I see Keith Olbermann say something or O'Reilly say something, I have already got it sorted out by several other sources, so I know what they're saying. But I will say, the people on the left are very fact-based, very knowledgeable of history, far more than I see from the people on the right.
On that note, we have to say goodbye, Dave. Is there a place online for people to get the whole study, Professor?
Yes, you can go to www.sacredheart.edu, and then if you click on news, you can search for the Sacred Heart Media Poll.
Okay.
But I also thought it might be useful.
Yeah, we're out of time.
if I could post on your comments page a link up to all the things I referred to.
Yes, please. Please do that. Okay, you can go to our Facebook page, right? Go to Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you get more information. Thanks, Rhonda Fanning, for producing this hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production as well. And thanks for your calls, everybody. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network.